There are so many barriers to innovation that many people never even attempt to innovate. And for the grand majority of people that do choose to innovate, they end up failing. So how do you go about lowering the cost of innovation and make it as easy as possible to succeed as an entrepreneur? Well, today I'm speaking with a man that has built a platform that makes it extremely easy to create new food products. Henrik Stam Christensen is a serial entrepreneur that has founded five companies, four of which are food tech companies. He is driven by his mission to make food and nutrition more easily accessible. He's currently the founder and chief moonshot officer at BlendHub and the founder of Chemometric Brain. He's actually the CEO of BlendHub, but you'll find out why he chooses to identify himself as the chief moonshot officer. Pretty fun anecdote there. And so in this episode, I want you guys to pay very close attention to how Henrik developed the BlendHub platform and how the platform works and the value that this platform creates for all the stakeholders involved. I think that thinking strategically about how you can build a platform around your company or product is one of the most important concepts that you can understand and apply. So I'm Julian Alvarez, and I'm a software engineer at Meta and a Gen Z entrepreneur, where I'm currently the co-founder and CTO at a startup named Vize. You're listening to the Inventing the Future podcast, where our mission is to introduce you to the entrepreneurs and ideas that will inspire and empower you to solve the world's biggest problems. With that, let's dive into the conversation. All right. Welcome back, everyone. I have an awesome guest with me today that I met through my entrepreneurship community called Abundance 360. Henrik is a superstar and he's a serial entrepreneur with five companies already. So Henrik, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Julian. And it's a real pleasure being here with you and love what you guys are doing. And especially I'm passionate about chatting to you today because I think that the next gen is so important. And I think many times, especially in my world of food and nutrition, we have had too many, let's say, I wouldn't say old people, but we have a certain generation of people that have been sticking in the industry for many years. So having a little bit freshness coming from you guys is really a pleasure. And this is what I truly believe is what is needed. And thereby, happy to be here with you guys today.
Well, yeah. I mean, our collaborative potential is maximized through the diversity and perspective. So great to know that you realize that and have that inclination. And I appreciate you bringing that idea to the forefront. So yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, you are a serial entrepreneur and you founded five companies, of four of which I believe are food tech companies and one being a community platform. So you've been in the food industry for, I believe, more than 35 years now. So I'm curious to start off with, like, why do you care about the food industry so much? And what then inspired you not just to play a role in this industry, but to be an entrepreneur and start companies, which is another level?
It's actually pretty simple because when I was very young, I started actually cooking at home, starting using the typical ingredients, making recipes from the typical cookbooks and so on. In Denmark, where I was born, we had this, what we call immersions into industry that you would like to work with. And at the age of 13, we had a week. And at the age of 14, we had another week. And both times I decided to go out and cook. So one of the experiences was actually, my first experience was cooking in an elderly home. Cooking for elder people was actually very interesting because you understand that even though that we have cookbooks, all the recipes that we have in the cookbooks might look the same. But, you know, when you cook for elderly people, you have to be very careful about, let's say, what they are capable of eating and intolerances and whatever that is related to their age group. So I was actually very impressed about how we actually adapted these recipes to that specific group. And then in my second year when I was 14 and I went out to cook again, I actually cooked at a bar that was open normally afternoon evenings. And of course, you know, bar people that comes in and have a couple of beers too much and so on, they're not so much after the cookbook. So they are more like a hamburger or a toast or whatever. I was really impressed myself because everything was related to the consumer group and to what this specific consumer group really wanted to eat. And then when I was 17, I got a trainee job in Shell. So my only 2.5 years outside the food industry was a trainee program where I was exposed to a big multinational, in that case, in the petrol industry. And I can tell you, I certainly did not like that experience. It was very informative, but you know, these global companies already back in 1982, 3, 4, when I was 17, 18, 19, it was a lot of hierarchy. So I understood that I better go back to the food industry. But of course, I was not really willing to make a cook job because I wanted to travel. So I was very lucky that close to my hometown in Denmark, there was a very big, actually American Danish ingredients company where I later on worked for 12 years. So I was really during from 1985 to 1997 where I stopped. I was really exposed to the world of ingredients, how ingredients are used in recipes. And again, I would say that how ingredients are misused in recipes because industrial recipes have to contain more water, more fat, more everything that we hear about when we talked about processed food. And of course, after an experience like that, where I was allowed to exposure both into supply chain, raw materials purchase, final product, ingredient sales, I knew already early on that this was my industry. And I was really, really keen on staying on and really trying to find my way into this industry segment that really needs so many things yet today.
Yeah, I love how it's not just a singular experience, but rather the collection of those experiences that further convinced you and solidified how deep of an impact you wanted to have in the industry. I also think it's really funny how your corporate experience of being at these multinational companies and the disgusting hierarchies that come with them is probably one of the key incentives that drove you to start your own company. I mean, was that like the main thing that inspired you to become an entrepreneur, or why make the jump from working at the multinational to start your own thing?
But I think actually a lot of, let's say, when you're young, and I say to you, I started when I was 17, much younger than you are today. First of all, and I think a lot of you and your listeners are having that experience themselves, you're not really sure about what you want to do. But of course, you are an entire person, so you start employing yourself into whatever. And then you start forming yourself in terms of what you see, what you hear, what you smell around. And then you start realizing what you like and what you do not like. So for example, my 2.5 years of entrepreneurship instead of internship, because if you are giving the possibility to have an internship, you're actually also given a huge opportunity to have an entrepreneurial experience, because after 1, 2, 3 years of whatever you are doing, you say to yourself, I really like this, and I certainly do not like that. So I found out during these 2.5 years that, first of all, I knew that already, of course, that I was not politically correct. So I call it the Boy Scout, chickalicka, chickalicka, chow, 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 where you always are doing as the leader is telling you. So that was certainly not me. So of course, understanding that you really want to challenge the status quo, first of all, from leadership. So somebody coming and telling you it has to be like this because I say so, that was not in my genetics. And that was why I searched back to the food industry, because again, I was not certainly not passionate about Shell or an industrial petrol company. So I knew at that time that I had to go back to what I was passionate about from childhood. And that was why I went into a medium-sized, you know, it was still a couple of thousand people worldwide, but it was in the food space. It was in the industry space. It gave me the possibility to travel. So I really wanted, as a Danish boy, I wanted to be exposed to Latin cultures and to other cultures. That was absolutely a fantastic experience for me, because I could not only see what it was to be in a smaller company, but actually in a company in an area where I was passionate. And furthermore, I will incentivize everyone that have the possibility to really go and travel, because until you have not seen more world than where you are born and grown up, you are really not becoming a master in understanding what is on people's mindset in different parts of the world. So I know that you guys are sitting in the US, and most of your listeners are probably American. So if you can have a possibility, and I want to take the opportunity, if any of you guys want a week or a month or 3 months of internship, let me know, because I would love to host you in Mexico, in Colombia, in Thailand, in India, in Spain, or whatever other, let's say, opportunity that we could find together.
Yeah, wow. Well, thanks for offering that opportunity. I would definitely recommend people take advantage of that, because I think your perspective is one of the most valuable things that you have, and it's one of the things that makes you the most unique. And exploring other people's perspectives, which is, I think, the main value you get from traveling, is the way you can enhance your own perspective, right? When you see that someone thinks so differently than the way you do, it inherently challenges you to question your own beliefs, not only question them, but also become aware of them. You may not even be aware of what you actually believe until you find someone that believes something in opposition to you. And I think traveling is definitely the most effective of it, because your head just explodes realizing how different people live. Like, it's kind of crazy to realize that at times.
Look at what is happening. For example, like, I like Just Tetrick in Just Eat. His experience in Africa made him set up the company that's today Just Eat, who are, let's say, disrupting a part of the agri-food value chain with an alternative to egg, because he saw in Africa how people were living. He saw in Africa how people were suffering certain things. And of course, in an entrepreneurial world, you really need to understand not only what will give you a personal opportunity, but also what will give many more people actually a value in their life. And that's, again, you know, a question that later on, when you become more and more mature, you start deciding not only based on your own wish or your own head or your own pocket, but you actually start deciding on what is good for so many more people. So the experience of traveling is not only good for you, but it can be immensely good for a lot of other people as well.
Yeah, what a great point. Because apart from exploring your own perspective, when you travel, you learn about the problems that exist in different countries. And I think the best thing you can do as an entrepreneur is to gain a greater awareness of problems that exist, because all of those problems are potential opportunities. And in depending on how much those problems interest you or excite you, that could be a serious key for what you want to do with your entire life and future, what you want to dedicate yourself to. And it's a recurring theme. Like, this isn't the first time I hear it from a guest talking about the value of travel. And one thing I want to highlight as well is that how you basically went about figuring out what you like and don't like. And I think that's almost like an internal traveling, right? An exploration of yourself into what things resonate with you, what things you like and don't. Because again, that's also the key to uncover as early as you can the things that are really going to move you and interest you and the problems you're going to end up solving and dedicating your life to.
That's exactly it. And again, give you a specific example. The first place I was destinated in or sent to in 1996, I was just 1 month in the company in Denmark. And they said to me, now you go to southern Italy, where, you know, really, really down south at the bottom, where it's another world. Many Italians say it's not even Italy because it's more close to nearly to Africa. But my experience was, first of all, an amazing amount of very kind people. And my second experience was that actually, when I was looking at food industry as such, think about a lemon, right? Everyone, when you think about a lemon or a fruit, you think about the first part of the lemon is the juice. So the juice must be the primary product of the lemon. So when you squeeze the lemon, you take the juice, you concentrate, and you sell that to beverage companies. The second product of the lemon is what is in the skin. So when you touch a lemon with your fingers, you have these oils that smells your fingers after you have touched a citrus fruit or a lemon. So you know that the second most important product will be the oils. Actually, in south of Italy, I was exposed to a product that was a byproduct that were the lemon peel. That means what was normally thrown to the animals just so the animals could eat the lemon peel. Think about that the lemon peel in the coming 5-10 years after my experience there became the most expensive product of the lemon, because the lemon peel could be used to extract an ingredient that was very valuable that is called pectin. And pectin is a gelifier that goes into the food industry. So think about that everything actually is not what it seems like. And with this experience, when you are 20, 21 years old, you say, gosh, industry is actually quite different than what I was expecting. And certainly it's very different from what I am hearing or reading in the media. So that was where I really gained traction around and say, this really, really is something for me. Because if a subproduct that was given to animals suddenly can be dried up in Italy and sent to Denmark to be extracting this product that has an immense value for the food industry, something is certainly not as it seems like. And I wanted to really explore more in that industry. And that was where my big decision came out and say, I really have to start thinking big, because otherwise I will not understand what this is all about.
Yeah, what a great example. I guess when you travel in that case, you also see how different people use food and consume food, which is really valuable. But let's talk about thinking big. I want to move into BlendHub. Before that, I noticed that you put on LinkedIn that you're the chief moonshot officer at BlendHub. So I'm curious, what is a moonshot? What does that mean? And maybe you could tell us a bit about the moonshot mindset and thinking big.
Yeah. When you recognize who you are, normally, let's say, or historically at least, I'm not sure that in the coming years, we will all have a title that makes sense for other people. So the moonshot for me, first of all, was inspired by our common good friend, Peter Diamandis. So when you come into a group of other people, again, you simply learn so much. And I must admit that by being part of the Abundance 360 for 4 years, I learned about moonshot, and suddenly I was capable of defining myself, because many times you're like one of these green guys that falls off the moon because a lot of people look at you. And when you're an entrepreneur and you're doing things that has never been done before, it's always that people say, first of all, they say, you're crazy, this cannot be done. And secondly, that incentivizes you even more to say, I know that this can be done. So we have a common saying, if you shoot for Mars, you might reach the moon. But if you just stay on Earth in the end, I don't think that our mindset is geared to think big. So think about another thing. When you talk about moonshot officer, when you define yourself, and of course, in my case now, I've had 35 years to think about it, you start putting yourself into boxes, because the history have taught us that the world is linear. Until a few years back, we were never talking about exponential. So you were putting yourself into a box. And of course, even when my mother was asking me and say, what are you doing, son? Are you not stressed? I said, I'm not stressed because I'm in this box where I have so much passion every day. So for me, it's no longer a box of work. It's a box of exploration. And I think that the word exploration and the word exploitation is actually very characteristic. And I think that most of our listeners today should think a little bit about themselves, because exploration is not giving us money today, but exploration might eventually be able to solve some of the big challenges in the world that we have today. Exploitation is about that we really land our big ideas. And I must admit that maybe I am a little bit too moonshot sometimes. I'm not, let's say, very good at exploiting or executing every single day. So I have a fantastic team in my company who understand very well that to execute, they don't have to go to me. So they go to me for asking me some of the big questions. And again, that has made us in our organization. So even if you're a startup with few people, we have seen over and over again that you need people with different skill sets. When people look at you from outside and you have to define yourself in this famous box, I have put moonshot officer on that box. So people are not expecting something normal from me. They always expect a story about what is going to happen in the next 5 years. So I don't know if that resonates with you as a vision.
Very much so. Well, firstly, like, In a nutshell, the moonshot mindset is basically thinking exponentially versus incrementally. Like, why think 10% incrementally better on how to improve some inefficiency when you can think 10x bigger and that of something completely new, an approach that most people haven't thought about? So it's a completely different line of thinking. But what I really like about this is that you're creating an identity for yourself around this mindset. And I think defining yourself in these sort of ways or defining these identities or beliefs is one of the most powerful things you can do. Because if you, for example, define yourself as a moonshot officer, you're like, well, if I want to live up to that identity, then I need to actually come up with a ton of massive ideas. I've read that one of the things that makes it so hard for people to stop smoking cigarettes, for example, is that they stop doing it, but they still consider themselves a smoker. Their identity is still a smoker. And one of the major psychological shifts they have to do is to say like, oh, I'm not a smoker. I just don't do it. That's not me anymore. So it's the same thing with this identity of a moonshot. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I'm a moonshot officer. Coming up with that big, massive ideas is just in my nature and what I do. And by defining yourself that way, it comes more naturally. So highly, highly resonate with that.
Just in addition to that, if you also internally, even, you know, that you are few or many people in your organization, you start using, let's say, this vision, people know exactly how they should approach you and what they should expect from you. So of course, it's as you say yourself so correctly, if you are not a moonshot guy, don't define yourself as that, because people have expectations. And remember that expectations is creating culture. And more, if you have a leadership role or you're an entrepreneur, remember that these expectations you have to fulfill every single day. And I just want to add another thing that I think will be valuable for your listeners as well. I have been using material from many people that have been much smarter and that are much smarter than me. One of the things that I have been very much into for the last 10 years was the book Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. He talks about what is technology adoption to main market. So one thing is that I think exponentially. I think about the big ideas that can solve my companies and the world in the next 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. But you also have to understand that when you execute these ideas, there is only 2% who are innovators. There are 12% that are early adopters. And most of these new products and ideas die before they ever go to main market. So when you think about the startup world today, actually, if you are not talking to an innovator or an early adopter, that is less than 15%, let's call it the population, or let's call it people, 85% of the people, either they do not understand what you are saying or they don't want to talk to you. So I have actually made a lot of mistakes, and probably my biggest mistakes was that when we were a very small company, I already early went on to tell people about my moonshot ideas. And funny story as well, I had a purchase manager in Saudi Arabia, and he said to me, he says, Henrik, shut up. He said, I married my wife 20 years ago. I still love her exactly as she is and as she was 20 years ago. So I do not want anything to change. So don't come to me and my company to tell us about change, because we are simply not interested. So you have to be very, very careful when you talk to the 85%, because otherwise you as an entrepreneur might be shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a really valuable book, Crossing the Chasm. I'll include that in the show notes. But yeah, basically, there's different people that are more willing to adopt a technology than others. And the way you reach them and market them is completely different than like the main market. So you have to be aware of that in order to adapt your marketing and sales strategies. I want to move on to BlendHub here, Henrik. And so this is a company you're currently leading in your big project. So tell us a bit about what BlendHub is and the value that you guys are creating.
I think it's important for everyone that understanding that I have created 4 food tech companies. I started with a slogan that convinced myself, that was kill the black box. So after being 12 years in that multinational industry, one of the things that really, really worried me and made me think big was all the things, as I said, that was not working, and especially in terms of, let's say, lack of transparency and traceability in ingredients and in recipes. So I built my first company, Premium Ingredients, based exactly on traceability and transparency. So we started blending ingredients based on, or recipes based on ingredients that we offered our customers full traceability. Of course, that was still handmade back in 1997. But the reason for doing this was that we wanted a different relationship model with our customers. And that was why we said, we do not want the recipes to be black box. We want you, customer, industry, to be aware of what it is they're selling you.
What do you mean by the black box and killing it?
I would ask you a question. What is it that you are eating when you are having a burger with a specific brand?
Right. I think I understand now. It's basically like you get the food, the end product, but there's very little conception of like what it, the nutrition that it actually contains, or how good or bad it is for you, or where it's coming from, how it was made. Is that how you would describe the black box?
That is exactly how you describe the black box. And for me, that is fine, because I think when we talk about, let's say, purpose is, of course, to give people the feeling, and not only the feeling, but if we can give them more than the feeling that you are in control, I think it's a human right to know what we put into our mouth. And that is certainly not the case even today.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge, because there's so many processes and things that go into producing your food. And without the transparency, you may be hurting yourself in some way. And that's why I think one of the greatest ways to practice this transparency is to educate yourself on food, nutrition, and health. And I know for myself that one of the things that's influenced what I put in my mouth the most has been just education on the good and the bad of the different foods that we consume on a daily process. It's very easy to take the position that ignorance is bliss, but for something as important as your body and your brain and the operational mechanisms of your consciousness, you want to make sure you're being optimal with your nutrition and your energy so that you can do all the things you want to do, and so that you can hold the companies that are producing these foods accountable to great conditions and being environmentally friendly as well.
You said it yourself, and I think it's a great, let's say, word, educate yourself. But the thing is that remember that we started in a B2B environment. So when we go back to BlendHub and say, first of all, let's help the industry by getting understanding of what is inside, which ingredients are inside the recipes. And of course, when you do that, you know it's not going to be a short, let's say, immediate win that you are going to create. You have to be very consistent. And of course, first of all, you have to convince food industry that they are willing to educate themselves. And then, of course, you ask yourself and you see some of the big brands that constantly, let's say, are in the media and say a lot of things that we are this or we are that. And then you know that 80% of the product is sugar, or a memo is coming out from internal sources, like in one of the big company cases recently, that 60% of the food they produce are unhealthy. Of course, education is not easy. And that's also why that when I continued with BlendHub beyond Kill the Black Box, I was completely into this is going to take time. And we want everyone to subscribe that this is a must, this is a need. Of course, for arriving to people like yourself who want to educate yourself, that means that you are a final consumer. We cannot stay with the B2B. So what we basically did in few words in these four food tech companies that were developed under the BlendHub umbrella is that we said step number one, we need to ensure food safety, food security, quality. So we build a big factory that I have just here behind me. That is what we call a static factory. when we got that right, it was slow. It took me 36 months and it cost me $15 million to build the factory. I said, this is not the way forward towards traceability and transparency. For being able to replicate, and here in comes the replication model. If you only build one company, it's good for you and it's good for the few customers you have around. But if you build a global replication model, it can start become good for so many more people. So we actually invented the world's first portable powder blending, packaging, and quality control factory in a 40-foot container. We patented that in 2010. We deployed the first one in India because one of the recipes had ingredients coming from India. So I said to myself, why do we take these ingredients from very far away, take them to Spain, blend them, pack them, quality control them in Spain, and then we send them back to the Middle East and to India again? Why don't we do it in origin? So in 2011, we deployed that factory in India, and we understood not only that we were doing an immensely amount good to the local community, we saved custom tariffs, we saved logistics time, we reduced our warehouses and a lot of other smaller bits and pieces. And all these things together made us save 30% of the recipe costs just by localization. So when we found out about that, that is 10 years ago, we said to ourselves, there is no doubt that the future of food is going to be localized. So why don't we accelerate the building of the replication model and we start deploying more hubs around the world? And this is where we ideated a multi-localized network of food production hubs closer to ingredients and closer to the final consumer. And today, by using data, we know that we can save between 20 to 50% of every single food recipe, industrial or to final consumers anywhere in the world. So think about how an entrepreneurial trip can give you a vision that you did not expect before. So that's why, again, that when you ask me about BlendHub, BlendHub was not one thing. BlendHub was my, let's say, the moonshot hat that I have on and say, when I discover one thing and I see that this is not sustainable, I need to discover the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And this is why it has taken us around 15 years to come to the conclusion now, because the last thing we actually built on top towards traceability and transparency was a digitized tool for building libraries of what we call good food quality and good food global supply chains. So coming back to you and your education, think about that maybe in the next few years, you will have the technology in your smartphone. You can go and scan whatever food product that you want to eat, and you can validate it against a cloud-based good food library that is available to everyone. So this is how BlendHub, we see the future of food that is based on an infrastructure model, localized food production. It's based on a cloud-based model, digitized quality and supply chain. And it's based on a third model that is a data-based model. That is what we call food as a service. So BlendHub today, rightly, we started as a food company. Today, BlendHub is certainly not a food company anymore.
It's a platform. Yeah, that's powerful. So let me try to digest that, since some parts of that might be difficult to understand, especially because it's such a crazy moonshot that people may not understand moonshots at the beginning. So you started with this idea of wanting to kill the black box, which in other words was like, let's create transparency around the supply chain of food production. And so you created, and you also have these two models, which are localization of food and the replication model, which is, I think, just means like being able to simulate the same experience in different locations by replicating the process or standardizing it. So what you did is you created this platform for food production as a service. So we have software as a service, right? Pay a subscription, you can use the software, it's great. But this is a platform as a service where basically anyone that wants to innovate on a certain food, let's say like you want to make a new cheese or dairy or plant-based product or a beverage, well, it takes so much effort and time and investment in order to create this new product that for many people, the barrier is just too high or they end up failing. So you're providing the platform, all the ingredients, all the tools, the innovation lab, the way to optimize it, and as well as to distribute the food so that every part of the process is simplified. So that decreases the barrier to innovation, which obviously accelerates it. And then at the same time, the last thing you mentioned was in order to hit that transparency mission that you had, you create like this technology that is able to analyze the foods that you're eating, which I think is brilliant because you're meeting people where they are. Anyone can use their smartphone, and now it's just a matter of seeing what food you have to identify what it is, its nutritional value, and where it was made and what it can do for you. So very interesting model that combines all these aspects to solve many, many important pain points.
And the beauty about when you start moving towards platform strategies is that, let's say, the things you are not able to do yourself, because everyone who is listening today, can of course understand that this has been a lot of, let's say, development, let's call it in-house. The truth is that at a very early stage, I was very interested in the concept that we call decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs. So in the last 10 years, I have been inviting a lot of people and companies actually to participate indirectly on that platform, or this platform that today become more and more visible, that you have just cited yourself so brilliantly well. And when people start understanding that they, by behaving in a similar way, this is what I call when people are sharing personal values, you can start creating shared value. So think about that the shared value part is a monetary thing, and the shared value is a human thing. So actually on the platform of food and nutrition, we are starting merging human behaviors and monetary sharing models in a transparent manner as well. So you are so right. And an example to the entrepreneurs that are online today, we have actually hosted several entrepreneurs. For example, a guy called Fran Molina here in Spain. He came to me because we had a friend in common. He's a personal trainer. He said, I have a community that I'm training, and I'm starting to become, I have my own YouTube channel. I want to launch my own brand. Can you help me? So we helped him to ideate, test, validate, and launch a new food product in 90 days. He had no experience. He had no brand. He didn't know on the ingredients. He did not know the recipes. But on this platform, we connected freelance recipe providers, ingredient suppliers, machinery suppliers, and of course, our own network of multi-localized production hubs. And we took him to market in 90 days. So this is a true record as well. And the only thing the entrepreneurs have to bring to the equation is their branding strategy, their sales and marketing strategy, and their distribution strategy. So if any one of your entrepreneurs want to create a food product, sell it on Instagram, we can actually help that to happen. And what we say in 90 days is basically feasible if the people who come to us have a clear idea of what it is they really want to do. So think about how many entrepreneurs we can actually give the same possibility that any of the big food product manufacturers or brands have had for the last 100 years.
I want to highlight here the importance and value of a platform, because I would highly encourage every entrepreneur that has a company to think about how they can create a platform. That really is one of the most unique differentiators. So for yourself, what I'm analyzing here is that your platform is really creating like a community with the right stakeholders that are able to accelerate the pace of innovation. So for example, if you need like ingredients from one place, you need like I don't know, legal from another, and you need something else from another place. There's like all this communication that needs to happen in order for the innovation to occur. But if you create a platform, you're essentially creating a community where these different players in the industry are able to come in one place. So finding them and sourcing everything you need is facilitated and therefore accelerated. So this is just one example of a brilliantly executed platform, but think about how you can do the same for your idea. Or if you're thinking of ideas, you may not even have a company, always think about the platform. Like something I always do for myself when thinking of problems and how to solve them is kind of having a list of powerful concepts or technologies. For example, how could AI solve climate change? How could VR solve climate change? How could we create a platform that enables climate change players and stakeholders to come together and work together to solve this problem? So the platform is a huge, huge value that you can bring to the table.
And I will give you another example that is very close to your American listeners. I met another dear friend at the Abundance 360 community back in 2018, AJ from Atlanta, who had just started, let's say, his, I don't know what you call that in the US, the foundation or the nonprofit that he calls Feed a Billion. So at that time, we talked about how can we help the less fortunate people. And in his case, this is about girls that have been trafficked, that have been abused, that have had all kind of difficulties in life. And we talked with AJ at that time about how we could solve that. And actually in 2019, AJ and one of my former employees was on stage with Peter actually telling the story. And at that time, we had a couple of donations. But again, I do not believe in donation. I believe in for-profit platform models where everyone are taking their small piece of the platform value, the economic value. Because otherwise, again, back to replication, if we cannot replicate, we can do it once. And we can go and have donations. You know, there are a lot of global organizations that are only living on donations. But Feed a Billion was joined last year, I think relatively recently, by Nicole. And now we have actually created three meals that are nutritional powder meals for three different age groups, girls that have a need for having a minimum, let's say, nutritional input in their, they have to, first of all, know what they eat. So we have made that traceable and transparent. We have put a product that has been validated by leading nutritionists around girls, and what is inside these three packs have been individualized for that specific consumer group. So they are now launching a model that is a business model that, of course, in this case can be many. So think about, again, the business model canvas. How do you make your business model, and how do you respect other business models, and how do you integrate these two business models into one on the platform? So I think the collaboration with Feed a Billion, go and see them on feedabillion.org, I think it is. Look at the meals that we have created, because that has been done together with BlendHub in Mexico, a small team of very passionate people in Mexico, finding the right ingredients with nutritionists, with ingredient suppliers, with a recipe provider. So what is inside this bag have a lot of small pieces from different people that will share the value and will have transparency about what in the end the girls put into their mouth, independently of their economic possibilities or status. And that means, and this is really my passion today, remember that we have 800 million people going hungry to bed, and we have 2 billion people having diseases of eating the wrong thing, diabetes, all kind of other collateral diseases. So think about if we are able on this platform to start integrating so many different stakeholders, and we actually give freedom in a transparent manner for all these stakeholders to connect to each other, I think we have an opportunity not to create a platform where winner takes all, but actually a platform where winners share everything. So I think that the future of what we are doing, and I'm following people like Sanjeev Chowdhury or Van Alstyne or Jeff Parker and so on, that are talking a lot about that platforms have to be integrating all the stakeholders so everyone gets a piece of what they are really bringing of value to that platform. So as you can hear, sorry again for extending myself, but as yourself, I'm tremendously passionate about platforms, and I think platforms can solve some of the world's biggest issues and problems.
Absolutely. What a great point. And I was actually going to ask you for resources on how to learn more about platforms. So it's great that you mentioned those people. I think it's such a powerful idea to basically realize that your business model could be literally analyzing other business models and seeing how you can integrate them together in a platform. It's very like meta and process and systems driven. But if you figure out how to merge those stakeholders and business models into a single platform, then the value aggregation just becomes magnified tremendously. So I love that. Love that. Okay, cool. So last few questions here, Henrik, and we've kind of moved into some entrepreneurial lessons like the platform. And one other one I want to ask about is related to like relationships and mentors, because you know, in analyzing your story and your success, I think one of the primary contributing factors of what you've been able to accomplish has been having the mentors, coaches, and business partners that have helped you maximize not only your impact, but the impact of all the companies you founded. So I'm curious what your philosophy and strategy around mentorship, networking, or relationship building is.
The first story that I think is making me very happy inside myself is that my mentor, a Danish gentleman that was my CEO of the first company I worked for in 1985, he is now late 70s, close to 80, and he's still on my advisory boards. It does not mean that when you respect age and knowledge, that you are limiting yourself. So the first advice I really want to give people is find yourself mentors who are passionate about what you are passionate about and listen to them when you are together with people that have a feeling with you from a personal level. The whole thing changes because you really start listening and learning. And I think it's very, very important that everyone, now we talk a lot about Gen Z and that you guys are so different. I think every single generation are different. I think we bring value to the table. And I think Gen Z is bringing a lot of value to the table. First of all, because you are the next generation and you will be in the food space, the consumers of tomorrow. So we want to hear you. We want to hear your voice. But we also want to hear the voice of the past. Because by understanding a little bit of history, and I'm not a great historian myself, but understanding a little bit of how people built companies in the past. Today we have Netflix and we have YouTube and we can learn so many things online that you guys are doing. But remember when in 85 I was out there, there was no YouTube, there was no smartphones. They could not read 22 articles in the morning. So the mentorship was extremely important. And the second thing I think is very, very important for all entrepreneurs is be, let's say, honest to yourself and honest to the people you have around you. Because if you are not honest and you are just going for shortcuts or monetary gains, you will actually have a lot of difficulties in finding mentors who will stick with you. Because another thing with mentorship, when you are learning, you become the mentor of the next generation. So already at that time, I think it was very important for me to start understanding how I could convert myself into a mentor for you. And that's again why coming back to what I said in the beginning of the conversation, if any of you guys or girls want an experience, you're more than welcome. All our doors are open. And not only me today, but I have great, great people in our company. And remember, we have local people in Colombia. We have local people in Mexico. We have local people in India. We have local people in Spain. And I'm Danish. So you can learn so much and have so many mentorships when you visit a company like us with a culture of giving back to other people and giving back to society because this is what I think ultimately everything is about.
Yeah, I love that. Wow, powerful quote to say that when you're learning, you're in the process of becoming a mentor in the future. I think that's incredibly valuable.
I think you're great, by the way, yourself. So, you know, I think reaching out to other people, and I'm internally grateful to you, because by promoting the voice of other people, today is a session of mentorship in the end. It's not about me telling my story and tell you guys how great I am or I would like to see myself. But I think really it's about how great can we be together.
Right. Yeah, no, that's what increments our potential and what we're able to bring not only to our own lives, but to all of humanity. And that's why mentorship plays such a key role in that. So appreciate you recognizing that and also offering those opportunities. Super, super valuable. And I would say, like, it's not that challenging. I have mentors myself, and it's just like finding people you admire, building the relationship, and just asking, like, hey, would you be willing to be my mentor? And you'd be surprised. Like, don't let that question, asking that question, scare you in any way. But most people are very willing to help. So use that to your advantage to build meaningful relationships that can help the both of you, not just you. And I always think about how I can form bi-directional value, right? Instead of one way, it's like, what is your goal as a mentor? How can I serve you? What are your challenges, goals, and problems? So with any relationship, try to see how you can always be offering, not just taking value. And one of the best advice I've heard on relationships is to build your network before you need it. Because if you wait until then, people can easily see what you're doing. And that's not good at all. Yeah, it's the core of humanity. One final thing I'll mention here before closing this point is that many people have the approach of being transactional in their relationships. And that's one of the most toxic things you can do, because what really counts is to be transformational and giving for the sake of giving rather than giving for with the sake of expecting a return. And I'll close this point by a quote by Joe Polish that I really like. And he says that life gives to the givers and takes from the takers. So just operate from that principle and you'll see what happens, the magic that happens. So yeah, Henrik, last question for you. You've given so much wisdom and advice, but I want to ask one last time, like, if you could send a voice message to every young entrepreneur in the world, what advice would you give them or what concept would you teach them?
That's a big one. But again, I have two drivers in my own life that are really working well. That is passion and perseverance. So I have four kids. We just talked about before that one of my sons, who is the oldest, is 22. I have a girl of 21. I have a boy of 18 and I have a boy of 12. And it has always been follow your passion. Never, ever do anything for the case of the monetary side of it. I think that being a great entrepreneur, as I said before, a skill set of humanity. So if we humans, and especially the young entrepreneurs, are understanding that it's much better to be yourself because everyone else already taken. I actually take that quote from Katy Perry in one of her songs. She says, be yourself because everyone are already taken. I think that is my absolute utmost advice to young people today.
Yeah. I love that. Discover and explore your own uniqueness, treasure it, and really manifest that potential that is unique to you. And yeah, I think most people aim to have financial wealth, but really it's important to recognize that if you want to be wealthy beyond your wildest dreams, it's not financial wealth that will get you there. It's the passion. It's the wealth that passion and purpose creates and gives you from your life. That is the true value and currency of life. So cool. Very cool way to end. Henrik, I appreciate your time. This was a thrill. And I wish you all the best with BlendHub and all of the other millions of companies that you'll continue to create. Loved it.
Last incentive I shared, actually, one of my latest favorite articles that is relatively fresh is coming from an impressive gentleman, as I said before, Sanjit Chowdhury. And it's an article about the future of platforms that are not based on winner takes it all, but winner shares it all. So I think this is a great read for everyone who has been listening to us today. I would also incentivize that everyone who have enjoyed the chat today reach out to both you and myself on LinkedIn, being the biggest, let's say, social network for entrepreneurs that right now at least existing, where you build bridges between the past and the future. And let's create discussions at an individual level, and let's create discussions at a joint level and create groups online where we are listening to the voice of more people. The more people, the better. So really would love to stay in contact with everyone, and feel free to ask questions online.
Great. Definitely will. Yeah. I'll include a link to that article that I'll ask you about that you mentioned, and links to your LinkedIn, your social profiles, as well as BlendHub if people want to learn more. But awesome. This was super cool, Henrik. Thank you for your time as always. And for the audience out there, thanks for listening, and stay infinite as always, my friends. Hey guys, three quick footnotes here before closing off. So the first is, did you enjoy the topics discussed in this episode? Well, I invite you to join the Slack community for this podcast, where we'll keep the conversation going by engaging in discussions related to the episodes discussed in this podcast. Here, you'll be able to engage in conversations with me and other listeners. And if you really enjoy this podcast, it is likely that you would relate well with other listeners that also enjoy the podcast. In this community, you'll be able to meet, engage, learn from, and potentially collaborate with the like-minded entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast. Let's invent the future together. The second quick note is, if you are interested in receiving updates on new episodes, I invite you to subscribe to my newsletter. And in this newsletter, I'll also share notes, insights, wisdom, tools, and strategies that are designed to help you become a better entrepreneur and live a healthier, fulfilling, and more productive life. And finally, the last footnote is that you can follow us on social media accounts to get updates on new episodes and engage with invaluable content related to entrepreneurship. And also, we have a website now. You can go to inventingthefuture.ai for detailed show notes on all the episodes. So the links for joining the Slack community, subscribing to the newsletter, the social media accounts, and the website can all be found in the show notes for this episode. So with that, I would like to wish you a day, week, year, and life filled with an abundance of love, energy, and prosperity. Take care and stay infinite, my friends.